Hi, everybody. I'm Ethan.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is That One Show with the Newmans. On today's eerie episode, we're going to go over haunted theaters.
All right, so I guess I'm going to go first today. And I'm going to be talking about the Birdcage Theater. It's super well known, especially among the paranormal community. It's in Tombstone, Arizona. The town was founded in 1879 when Mr. Ed Shiflin hit silver. Many flocked to the area in hopes of the same fortune. And because of this, the town went up extremely quickly, and the population grew from about 100 to 14,000 in less than 7 years. And back then, that was a significant population growth. The population statistics do differ, however, just because of the time period that this was in. Some people were not accounted for, unfortunately, due to race. But the numbers I have found have been between 100 to 4,000 or 5,000 to 100 to 15,000 to 20,000. That's just how much the population differs due to where you find them.
Well, good Lord, no consistency.
No, there was definitely not consistency with those numbers that I found, but I did find some consistencies in others, which are a little bit more shocking. So the Birdcage Theater was a saloon, a theater, a gambling hall, and a brothel. It opened in 1881 on Christmas Day. It was also open 365 days a year, 24/7. Now, it closed down in 1889, so between the times of 1881 and 1889, there were gun and knife fights that took place here that left 140 bullet holes in the walls, floors, and ceilings, as well as taking around 26 lives in its entire time of being open.
That's a lot of death.
Yes, especially in one small place, because the Birdcage Theater is not just this big, extravagant, what you would think, like an opera hall, but it's not. It was a very small saloon, theater, gambling hall, and brothel.
Like, what kind of square footage are we talking? We talking, like, the size of a regular, like, 1,200 square foot house, or?
More of probably what you would think would be out in the wild, wild west. You know, those typical size buildings.
So, yeah, that'd probably be about a 1,200 mm-hmm. square footer, at least on the base level.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Now, the basement was a poker room, and it was home to the West's longest poker game. It lasted for about 8 years, 5 months, 3 days.
What?
Nonstop for 24 hours, and the minimum buy-in for this poker game was $1,000.
8 years?
Yes. It lasted for 8 years, 5 months, and 3 days, 24/7. It didn't stop.
That is a long game. I wonder if there was anybody that stuck through it the entire 8 years.
Now, that I would have to look more into, but I'm sure that there had to be a break for some people at some point. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you got to think, though, too. The way that the poker games work is, you know, from time to time, you'll have somebody leave the table, but the game will keep going, mm-hmm. and then someone will buy into the game. So it probably wasn't necessarily like 8 years of sitting in the seat, obviously, because that could be very detrimental to someone's health.
Now, but, I would love to have been a fly on the wall when those poker games were going on, just to hear those conversations and see some of those hands that some of those people had. Especially if you're buying in for $1,000, you better be a good poker player.
Right. Well, I mean, how many of those 140 bullet holes were caused because of that poker game?
Oh, no. That's a very good question. But another thing is that the private bird cages, or the birdcage cribs, I should say, were for the prostitutes and their clients at the theater. The bird cages, hence the Birdcage Theater, were suspended from the ceiling where the painted ladies would entertain the men for a high price. So, put two and two together and figure out what the painted ladies did.
I'm imagining that they weren't offering, you know, back rubs. Well, they probably were offering back rubs, but they probably weren't offering to do your dishes for a week or two.
So that, I mean, and that's what this Birdcage Theater was known for around the town. There was a lot of the more predominant women of the town who would not even walk past the Birdcage Theater. They would actually go to the other side of the street rather than walking past the building because they were too proper for that. That was kind of where the rougher, tougher crowd in the community went.
Well, I guess, you know, if I were a lady back then, I probably wouldn't want to be seen walking next to that building.
And that's how they felt. They didn't want to be, you know, seen going even past a building like that, so people didn't assume that they were coming out or going in, that kind of thing.
Oh, look at that tramp.
And that's, I mean, and that's really how it was back then. And one of the biggest stories that I found kind of interesting on this theater. So Gold Dollar, she was a prostitute. She found another girl by the name of Margarita, who was also a prostitute, with one of her best clients and who she called her boyfriend.
Very classy.
Well, Billy Milgreen is her boyfriend, who she called, who was caught with another woman. So Gold Dollar stabbed Margarita in the chest with a double-edged knife. Gold Dollar was never charged with the murder since they could not find the murder weapon. She took off and ran, couldn't find the murder weapon, so they couldn't charge her with anything. So Miss Margarita really never got justice for what happened to her.
Golly.
Well, what's super crazy about this, and I'm, you know, I'm kind of curious about what other people's theories are on this. Over 100 years later, the knife that was used by Gold Dollar in that murder was found behind the theater. And it's now in a nice little glass case in the museum part of the theater now on display.
Kind of makes you wonder, what's the statute of limitations? Is 100 years too long to be charged with that murder?
I mean, I don't know. I think some vengeful spirits would agree that that's not too long.
Oh, absolutely. Which I'm sure this Gold Dollar chick didn't live to be over 100 years older than when the age she was whenever done this murder.
Now, there's also one more very significant item that is on display at the theater. It's called the Black Mariah. It's a 24-karat gold and silver-plated hearse that carried all but 6 townspeople to Boot Hill Cemetery. And people made a slogan for this hearse, and it was a cowboy for breakfast every day. So there is a lot of death and a lot of mourning and a lot of sadness that has kind of been brought into this theater just by the hearse being on display here, along with, you know, the 140 bullet holes that were left in the wall, and the numerous, you know, stab marks from knife fights and that kind of thing. Now, the amount of activity reported here is crazy. But some of the biggest things that I found were a lot of people have seen prostitutes and men in cowboy hats. They've also reported sounds of yelling, music, footsteps, and laughter. And I'm assuming, you know, that could probably be from anywhere in this theater. I mean, you had the poker hall or the poker table room downstairs. You had the stage and all of this different stuff going on. So I'm sure a lot, in my opinion, I believe a lot of that is just residual.
Yeah, I mean, it's an all-you-can-eat buffet of paranormal activity waiting to happen whenever you've got all this negative energy that's been generated by all these negative circumstances.
And I'm not going to say that all of the energy there is negative. I believe that the residual energy there is just of people who would come in every single night, sit at the bar, sit in their favorite chair, sit down at the poker table. And because this place was open 365 days a year, 24/7, so many people probably just had this as in their basically in their DNA to go to, and do the same thing every single time. Just like some of us smoke at, let's say, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and we do that every single day. these guys and gals probably had a certain time they did a certain thing every single day.
Well, yeah, just like a lot, you know, there, some people in their routine, they go to a pub every day after work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's probably no different.
And there's also been reported a man in black that walks the stage, just kind of back and forth paces the stage. My theory on this is that it could possibly be the driver of the Black Mariah who had to take all of these citizens to the cemetery all the time because, you know, deaths were happening pretty frequently here. It was back in the day where deaths were a lot more common and men, women, and children. I could only imagine the burden that was put on this man or woman who had to take these people. And I'm assuming back then it probably was not a woman, but I believe in my theory that that's who that could possibly be. And there's also been reported to be anywhere between 26 to 31 ghosts present here. People.
Whoa. How many?
26 to 31.
Jeez.
And if you remember, there were around 26 lives that were taken at this one location alone from gun and knife fights alone.
Well, that sounds to be right about the right number, I guess.
You know, and who's to say that a barkeep that had worked there forever, you know, doesn't stick around? Or, I mean, you don't know what causes people to stay and what causes them to go and, you know, those kinds of things. So that was my research now, on the birdcage.
The 26 lives that were taken, is that including, and you may have already said this, but is that including anybody that may have died of natural causes?
This, from what I found on my research, this is just from the gun and knife fights.
Okay,
alone.
So you may have much more spirits that are left behind from, you know, natural causes.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, 26 were, from my research, the 26 were just from gun and knife fights alone.
Well, goodness.
Yes, because this was like your typical Wild Wild West town. So this number back then really wasn't a big ta-da. Like, it was just almost like a common occurrence in the Wild Wild West, just kind of how rough this place was and how tough these guys were, thought they were, kind of thing. So yeah, but that was my Birdcage Theater.
So now the Birdcage Theater, that's where good old Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp were from, right? Well, the whole Tombstone, Arizona thing, I imagine they may have had a beer or two there. Played a couple of hands of poker.
Hey, you never know.
So, who knows, maybe one of them spirits is good old Wyatt Earp or poor old Doc Holliday after his tuberculosis incident.
Hey, you never know.
One of the other areas that we're going to be discussing today is also the Silent Movie Theater, which this is a very well-known location in the paranormal field. So, this theater has a not-so-peaceful history attached with it, and we're going to dive right into that right now. It started off as a great and successful idea. The year is 1942, and the world is in the midst of the silent film boom. John and Dorothy Hampton, a couple from Oklahoma, opened up the theater. John Hampton was responsible for restoring countless silent films in an attempt to protect them in the name of cinema history. Little did they know that they were opening one of the most beloved theaters in the United States. And if this theater is specifically located in Los Angeles, California. Unfortunately, the Hamptons decided to close down the theater sometime in the 1970s. And in 1990, John Hampton ended up passing away from cancer that was caused by the toxins related to the film preservation that he was doing. So essentially, you know, he died for what he loved. And in 1991, a family friend by the name of Lawrence Austin reopened the theater. After a few successful years, Austin's life came to an end after business partner and projectionist James Van Sickle hired a hitman who gunned him down in the theater's lobby in 1997. Apparently, the business partner hired the hitman in a bid for the inheritance. Greed at its finest. So, during the scheduled hit, Mary Giles, or Giles, however you pronounce it, it starts with a G. She was an employee who worked at the concession counter. She was actually shot as well during the hit, but she actually survived it. And both Van Sickle and his hired hitman, Christian Rodriguez, they were both convicted and sentenced to life in prison. So shortly after that, the theater was placed on the market in 1998 and purchased by film enthusiast Charlie Lustman, who reopened it and screened Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times, which is Hollywood's last silent film, or feature film, rather. So I guess that's a very notable movie to start to premiere on with your opening night.
Absolutely.
So, Lustman improved the theater by putting up a new marquee, new screen. He added a cafe as well as did just a general redecoration. Because when you're trying to preserve some of the history of a place like this, you can't go all out with a huge scale redecoration, because you can only do so much for older styled theaters. But business wasn't booming enough for the film, or from the film side of things. So what Lustman had to do was he had to supplement the theater by offering a venue for private parties and other events. So, but at the end of the day, in 2006, he decided to sell the business due to declining health. But shortly after it was listed, the theater was purchased by Dan and Sammy Harkham. Hadrian Belove from the Cinema Family Organization joined the Harkhams in reopening the venue in 2007 as a hub for revivals and indie films. So, a lot of people would try to, get their indie films out there by showcasing them here at the silent movie theater. So, they went 10 successful years until 2017, and this is because allegations of sexual misconduct and mistreatment of staff had come about. These allegations caused Hadrian Belove to leave the organization that he himself had founded back in 2007 before purchasing the theater, or at least jumping into the business agreement with Dan and Sammy Harkham, rather. And board member Shady, I honestly can't even really say the last name. I'm going to say El Nashay. We'll go with that. Shady El Nashay also resigned during these allegations. So obviously a lot of bad publicity had occurred for the Cinema Family organization as well as the theater. So on November 14th of 2017... the Cinema Family made the decision to officially shut down the organization, and the silent movie theater was to be closed and renovated by the landlord, Dan Harkham. So during this time, the board of the Cinema Family, they established a transition team to handle all of the organization's financial and legal affairs, and once that's completed, they will officially dissolve the entire organization. Shortly before they made that decision to dissolve, Harkham had decided to file paperwork for a new corporate entity, the Fairfax Theater, LLC. And the theater is still today undergoing the current renovations.
So are they planning to reopen this theater? Are they planning to do anything else with it, make it into something different?
Well, based off of the information that I have found, and I've done some extensive research on it, and it's been, they're not releasing a lot of information at all. The Fairfax Theater is not, they did at one point have an Instagram. From the looks of it, it looks like they are intending on reopening it. It just will not be part of the Cinna family. It'll be just the Harkham family will be owning it rather than the Cinna family running it.
Okay.
So it'll be run directly by the landlords versus the organization that they did have running it. It kind of seems shady, I mean, to a degree.
I think what I'm going to theorize is going on is either they're trying to rebrand it in a way so they can get away from all the negativity that has surrounded this place for so long. There's actually a big place that I'm going to do some research on that we can do in an upcoming podcast that has done the same exact thing because of the negative history that has surrounded this area. But maybe that's what they're trying to do, is rebrand themselves in a way to where when you look them up, that's not the first thing that you come across.
I mean, that very well may be it. I mean, you know, because they, right now they've got two big things that are just floating around that theater that are really haunting its reputation. And first off, the bad juju around it. You know, you got a murder that's happened there, and you've got the owner that, you know, pretty much died for his work. Mm-hmm. And then now you've got these sexual allegations and whatnot. So, I mean, yeah, that's a bad reputation to have. And I don't blame them for trying to go with a different name.
Which I don't know if I would consider, you know, the owner's death, who died of cancer, necessarily a bad juju thing. More
well, yeah,
of just
no,
a,
not that.
More of just like a tragic story that, you know, this man was doing this for so long, and, you know, what killed him was the thing he loved most. You know, that's almost more of just like kind of like the tragedy, I guess, surrounding the place.
Right. No, I agree with that. You know, and I think, I don't know if maybe they're trying to escape that stigma of the paranormal activity.
Go ahead.
That's kind of what I was thinking as far as quote-unquote bad juju, because, you know, you've got several folks who don't like paranormal-type activity. They don't like the thought of it, and, you know, maybe the Harkham family thinks that it's bad for business.
And, I mean, I agree. That's very true. Some people do think that that's bad for business, and they don't want that to be the only reason why people come to visit them. They want it to be for more of what they have to offer now, not what they have to offer exclusively based on their past.
So more or less, I mean, it's just like you wouldn't want someone going into an auto mechanic shop looking for someone to fix their vacuum.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's not what they're there for. They're not there for vacuums. They're there for cars.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I completely get that. Now, kind of going back into the theater itself, there's two primary manifestations that occur in the theater. The first would be that of the owner, John Hampton. Many say that he haunts the upstairs lounge, which the lounge actually used to be his and his wife Dorothy's apartment for over 45 years. So they lived there a very long time. The second primary manifestation that occurs, which is quite possibly the most chilling and the most eerie, is that of Lawrence Austin. Apparently, he haunts the lobby where he was murdered. In fact, people say that he is actually regularly seen in the lobby by many confused employees after hours. They say that his spirit is still around, although it's been more than a decade since he was murdered. It's believed that Austin's spirit can still be heard roaming around the upstairs level as well, where the projection room is located. Maybe this could be an attempt at revenge for the man that took his life, you know, and did it for greed. But, you know, there's been other manifestations. How's that sound? Anyways. There's been many of those, and one of them is actually Ghost Adventures had come to investigate and apparently made contact with a deceased movie star. I won't do no spoilers, so if you watch Ghost Adventures, then go ahead and watch that episode of the Silent Movie Theater to find out what they saw. Now, when interviewed by Ghost Adventures, one of the former employees named Jason Flood stated that he had experienced many unusual occurrences at the theater during his career there. I'm assuming that that's talking about the apparitions in the lobby and the noises in the upstairs projection room area. And you know, many customers have also claimed to hear seats squeaking as if there were people sitting right next to them, but nobody was there. Yeah, you know, so that's kind of creepy. so there's quite a bit of activity out there that folks have kind of picked up on and commented about. And if you don't already know, me myself, I'm a huge skeptic whenever it comes to paranormal. And it wasn't until I did an investigation with 765 Paranormal out of Indiana. They're actually based out of Lafayette, Indiana. We did an investigation at the Fowler Jail in Fowler, Indiana. And I decided to be a little more open-minded after some of the paranormal experiences I had. And you can ask Bethany. She said, hey, you want to go on this investigation? Why? I ain't going to see nothing. Nothing's going to happen.
He's very skeptical, I will say. Sometimes to a fault, but...
To a fault?
Whatever. Sometimes it's to a fault, but I am very open-minded with the situation. I am actually an investigator with this group. They are probably the best second family anybody could ever ask for, but, I mean, hey, everybody, you know, thinks things differently.
Yeah, I will say that 765 was very welcoming to me. They, I mean, as soon as I came with them, they treated me like family. Which, I mean, they're just great people. I mean, all of them. I really enjoyed hanging out with all of them. And they were all very supportive, too, whenever all this paranormal crap started happening to me. They were like, yeah, here they're explaining everything to me. I mean, it worked out perfectly. So I was thankful that the very first group that I ever went with during an investigation was 765 Paranormal. And if you haven't already heard of them, you need to look them up on Facebook and give them a like and give them a follow. You can go to their website at www.765paranormal.com, or you can just search them up in Facebook at 765 Paranormal. Just give them a like and just look at their content. Their content speaks for itself. So, but yeah, anyways, I didn't mean to go on a sponsorship segment, but that's apparently what just happened. Sorry, I really enjoy the 765 crew, if you can't tell.
You know, we love our para family, and any chance that we get to kind of put them out there to everybody, we're going to do. The entire group is phenomenal. They do phenomenal things, and they have for years. So, like Ethan said, you know, you get a chance, look them up, give them a like, check out their stuff, and we'd love to see you guys at some upcoming events that we have.
Definitely well worth the like. I'll give you that much. So, now back to our actual podcast.
Well, I think we're done with our sponsorship ramble here.
Yeah. Sponsored by. But anyways, my final thoughts on the silent movie theater is, you know, I believe that if there is a haunting there at that theater, it would certainly be done by the spirits of both John Hampton and Lawrence Austin, more so Austin due to the nature of his demise. You know, having a fate as such, that certainly would make it plausible to leave behind a post-mortem stomping ground for sure. I do believe that the spirit of Austin is hanging around the lobby, and I believe that that could be him just trying to continue the day that was taken away from him. I mean, he's probably stuck in that spirit is stuck in that endless loop of checking to make sure the floors are clean or the trash is taken out. I mean, that's probably the loop that his spirit is stuck in.
And when I talk about residual hauntings, that's kind of what I'm talking about is somebody who's done the same thing over and over and over and over again, and it's that energy gets stuck there on, like you said, that loop.
Yeah, I would assume. I mean, you gotta think it's probably my theory on it is that if there is that residual energy and it's that endless loop, what it is it's, I think it's that like last 10 to 30 seconds of what was going through his mind at that particular moment when his life came to an end. And it's just playing over and over like a broken record. You know, and on the other hand, though, his spirit in the projection room, in my opinion, has a much darker assumption from me. If he is, in fact, in the projection room, I believe he is waiting. You know, waiting to exact his revenge on the man who took everything from him. Do I blame him? Absolutely not. I'd be angry, too. You know, if I looked anything like this Van Sickle guy that had hired somebody to kill him, I'll tell you what, if you look like him, I don't think I would show up at that theater.
Now, I do have a question. You might have said it, and I might have not heard you, or not had my listening ears on. What was the outcome of the man and the hitman who were hired? Did they just go to jail or prison? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
They both, life?
Yeah, they both have life sentences.
Okay.
Yes, I did not check on their current status to see if they're still alive or anything like of that nature. I imagine they probably are, but I can't speak to if they are or not. I'd have to Google it.
Now, my question would be, once these two men meet their final fate, I wonder if some of this activity will stop or if it will continue.
Oh, that's a very good question.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to know what the viewers think, or listeners.
Speaking of that, I was going to get to that at the end, but I'll go ahead and interject it here. I am actually going to set up an email, and it's going to be specifically for our listeners, and I want it to be something where our listeners can either tell us if they've been to some of these places that we talk about, if they have any theories about some of the things that we've talked about, or, you know, anything like that, that they can email us, let us know, and kind of, you know, we can talk about some of their experiences if they want us to, or they can just give us some more information about some of the places we've looked at.
Yeah, we're wanting to be, you know, 100% crowd involvement. You know, any of our audience is more than welcome to, you know, throw us some suggestions on what to speak about, or certain topics, or if you want us to tell your stories, we'd be more than happy to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's perfect. I mean, just make sure that you like our Facebook and stay tuned for any future updates on how to get involved with our podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, back to the my final thoughts on the manifestations with whenever it comes to John Hampton, and this will be my final remarks in reference to the whole silent movie theater altogether. With Hampton spending so much of his life in the apartment, which is now the lounge of the theater, I also think it's entirely plausible for his spirit to resonate from his residual energy, because, I mean, you can't tell me that if you live somewhere for damn near almost a century that you wouldn't leave something behind. I mean, 45-plus years, half a century, I mean, you do the math. I certainly think that you would leave something behind with that much time.
I agree with that 110%. But I am one who very strongly believes in residual energy, residual hauntings, that kind of thing. I do believe in energy, whether it be extremely negative or extremely positive. But that is definitely something that we can talk about in another podcast, kind of our thoughts on certain kinds of energies, hauntings, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And with that being said, I think we are at a good closing point. So we want to thank all of the listeners for joining us and listening to this eerie episode of That One Show with the Newmans. So again, my name is Ethan.
And my name's Bethany.
We're the Newmans, and thank you for listening.